So I've just been looking at your Instagram, Alex. I'm coming to you first.
Are you recording this now? God,
I'm recording. Yeah, yeah. I can cut and edit whatever we don't want to. If you say anything you shouldn't be saying, we can cut it out. But yeah.
Let's be offensive.
That's my job. So yeah, I've just been looking at your Instagram, and I'm like, okay, she's a good racer. She won the Northern Finals, 7 finals. Don't really know a lot about her. I'm scrolling through your Instagram. I'm like, girl, this girl can move. She's got some skills. And I was like, right. I check out, some more. And I was like, well, there's some stuff on here. Like, oh my goodness, you need to teach me some of this stuff. You make it look so easy. I bet as well. That's the problem,
I think we're the type of people, we like skills. We see something on the internet and we're going to go, yes, I'm going to do this. And then you're sitting on the bar and you're finding out it ain't that easy.
No.
But I think we enjoy the challenge.
The particular one that I was quite impressed with, and this is not going to help on a podcast because it's not very visual, but is the circle round off flip things where you put your leg on a bar and then you do the circle and then you land.
It's called a knee giant, as I just learned by looking on the internet. You sit on the bar, you take your hands off and you swing all the way around by your knees. I have only just learned that this summer, and it was slightly
and this one as
scary.
Well.
Oh, yes.
What is that all about?
It's a straddle-on dismount. What you need to do is go and check out all these gymnastic videos on the internet or parkour videos and get inspired, Jack.
I suppose that's my first question is it parkour? Is it gymnastics? Is it an ape index thing? Is it all amalgamated into one? So I suppose my question is, where does this all come from? Why OCR now? Why parkour? Why, was it started as gymnastics for you, Alex? Or
it started as nothing at all for me. I was just the average 30-odd-year-old mum of 2 kids. And I was slightly competitive, and my friend saw Ninja Warrior on the telly, and she went, there's this show on telly, you got to go on it. I didn't watch any telly, so I hadn't seen it. So I agreed to anything. So just because I like a laugh, I applied for it and then invited me to the auditions. And I went, what is the show really about? And my friend went, well, go on YouTube, check it out. Well, I checked it out and I freaked out.
What year is this?
And that was in 2015.
Okay.
I was just the average mom. I couldn't do any of these tricks. I couldn't do anything at all. But I decided I'll go to the auditions and look what it's all about, because I had this fantasy that you could go on the course and play on the course. Mm. Anybody that knows anything about Ninja Warrior knows that you cannot play on the course at all. You just go on once and once only when the lights come on. So that's obviously a disaster in the making.
Yeah, for sure.
So after that, though, I went to a competition in a Ninja Warrior gym, and I could see what all these boys could do. But they were from loads of different backgrounds. Some were parkour, some were climbing. And I saw them, and I was pretty much inspired, and I liked all the different skills. And I saw a skill, and I'm going, oh, I want to do this. So I practiced that for a bit, learned that skill, and then usually I just move on to something else. And that's pretty much what we do at Ape Index now. We see a skill, we practice this skill, we get good at it, we move on to something else exciting.
I don't know. You mentioned Ape Index, so that's your trade. Do you own that, Nigel? Is that your place, or is it just?
Yeah, been here 5 years now. Built it all from scratch.
And again, is that a love from sort of Ninja Warrior initially, or what? How did you start?
Well, this place started off as a climbing centre, and I was busy building a bit of the climbing wall, and some burglars broke in and stole my saws, so I had to think of something else. And this was before Ninja Warrior had been on the television, and I thought, well, I'll just build a few little ninja things, because I'd watched the Japanese version of Ninja Warrior years ago.
Well, like Takeshi's Castle.
Sorry?
Like Takeshi's Castle.
Yes, and all the old rubbish off the Chinese, off the Japanese TV. And I started building some ninja stuff and never really stopped. By the time I got to building the climbing wall, it was suddenly only half a gym instead of the whole thing. And more people seemed to be interested in the ninja things than the climbing wall. So when I started building the rest of the gym out, I just built more ninja stuff.
So, and what year was that you started that?
Oh, crikey. What is it now? 2020. So that would have been 2014.
We write 2020 off, Nigel. 2020.
That's how I didn't
write that off. So we go before then.
Well, I started planning it in about 2013, probably. So it's been a long time in the making.
And you're Leicester based, right?
Yep. Set in Leicester now.
Set in Leicester. I need to come. I need. I was talking to Tom Wilson, one of I think your guys' teammates there that comes a lot.
Yes.
And he was like, "Oh yeah, you need to come over." So I think I'm going to plan a trip, maybe, and bring some of my members over, and we'll come and have a bit of a sesh. But so it's interesting you say that, Nigel, because I'm the same. I have an outdoor place called Field Fit, and I sit at home, and my nights are under my duvet. This is truth. Under my duvet on my phone, like scanning through Instagram, looking for obstacles, looking for, you know, ideas, interests, things that can amalgamate. And she's like, "Jack, what are you doing? Put the bloody light away, go to bed." I'm like, "No, I'm looking for ideas." Yeah. And it is that, like, when you're a business owner and you've just got that, like you say, a saw in your hand, the world is your oyster and you can literally put up anything you want, even if it doesn't work. You know, like, I've got obstacles that I've put up and gone, "You know, that didn't quite work. We'll turn it into something else," you know, or what have you. That must be a great feeling, especially indoors, because you haven't got to worry about rain, wind, storms, you know, all that winter horrible stuff that's coming up. Although I don't mind that, but
true.
That's that. Yes, I didn't realize that's how it all started. And hold on, so someone broke in and they stole your saws. Of all the things in there, they just stole your saw.
Yeah, we actually got him on video lifting up a table saw with a crosscut saw on top, staggering out the door and heaving it through the car park.
So he's obviously watching you then. Yeah, you're obviously targeted. So at this point, Alex, were you in Germany or were you in England?
No, I've been living in the UK for the last 20 odd years.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So I think the OCR side came into it for two reasons. Number one, 2 years ago, I fully dislocated my elbow. So jumping onto that with any force was not exactly on the cards. And then the OCR World Championships were in the UK. And we got to give credit to Nigel here. He was like, "We are qualifying and we're going." And I'm like, "I don't want to do that." Because I really wasn't. It's a different world out there. I mean, people always see all the skills we've got on obstacles. But going into OCR is a very different kind of game. You're out there in the weather, in the rain, in the mud. Everybody was having a laugh before I went to the World Championships, going, "Oh, once I get out there, I have no hope at all." And although I said, "Watch me go," I did agree with these people that said, "Once I get in the mud and rain, I'm doomed."
Yeah. Well, even doing obstacles is a different story, isn't it? Forget the weather, forget the running, forget the hills, forget all the terrain. Just doing a simple obstacle like, I don't know, nunchucks or something like that, you get mud and cake on your hands and all of a sudden that's a different story, you know? And you can't exactly, Nigel, I don't know, you probably have, throw a load of mud on your obstacles at Ape Index and say, "Go for it." I mean, we do, at the field, we last year training for a couple of the Spartan things at the winter, we were actually putting ice buckets at the obstacles and I was getting my clients to put the hands in their ice and then go on the monkey bars because they can all do monkey bars.
Yeah.
But you try and do it where you can't even move your hands. Different story, right?
How much difference it makes,
exactly. So before all of that, then, were you, especially yourself, well, Nigel, I'm interested, obviously climbing then obviously would have been your initial sport, would it have been?
Yep, rock climbing, nothing
rock
else.
Climbing. Yeah, you look like a rock climber, if you don't mind saying. And then for you, Alex, it was, what was your sport? Did you have a sport or was it literally just, are you one of these horrible people that is just good at everything you do?
I wouldn't say that, but yes, I did no sport at all from leaving school until I started that OCR Ninja Warrior 5 years ago. I did absolutely nothing. I was just...
Nothing? All the way up to your 30s?
Until I started when I was 37 I was when I went on the first one, on the Ninja Warrior one. I had absolutely no skill. I had no idea what it was all about. I just went out there and went, okay, I'm going to try and have fun here. Now it's more like I get a little competitive at times, especially with Nigel. It's not about being the top girl. You got to beat Nigel on the course.
You got to beat everyone. Yeah.
You know, ideal scenario.
And but, what's really funny is, right, so there's two things that you've as me as a coach, you've hit on me there. One is you go out to have fun. You don't always go out to win. You do, but initially you go out to have fun, which is a massive thing. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Secondly, you go out to compete against Nigel, which is interesting because I always say, if you look at the like really top athletes, they've always had a training partner or even a brother. Like if you look at the Brownlees, you know, they race together. You know, there's so many people that work together to race together. And it's not, I'm just beating you. I'm beating everyone. And you've both probably actually got that mental attitude that actually, you know, I'm going to win. And definitely, Alex, with you, even though you had a smile on your face when you ran, I could see in you, you really wanted to win. Does that make sense? Like, and it was like, where's Nigel? What's Nigel's time doing? What's Nigel? Film Nigel. You know, it was like, I really want to make sure I beat Nigel. But also, and this means nothing on you, but obviously because your age is, if some young gun does come and beat you, you can almost go, well, do you know what? They're 20 years younger than me. You know, screw it. I still did quite well. The stupid fact is you still won, Alex, overall this weekend and in Northern Time Trials. And obviously Nigel did well in the Northern Time Trials. Just amazing, really. So let's get onto that. So let's forget this weekend. Let's go back to Northern Time Trials. How was the Northern Time Trials? Because obviously we weren't there, so we didn't know the course. We did have some fun film it for us. How did you find the Northern Time Trials?
Well, they were absolutely awesome. Well, both of the time trials were. I was not very prepared for the Northern ones because unfortunately I was busy, so I only arrived there at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Righty,
I don't want to say what I had for breakfast. We skipped that bit because that's not good nutritional advice. And then away we went. Obviously we got extremely lucky with the weather. It is a fantastic place. The whole setting, the whole farm, everything was just awesome there. I was quite positively surprised from the, it was a good range of obstacles, the same as in the Southern. It was something to suit everybody. Did I go out there and thought I'm going to win? No. Did I hope I get on the Masters podium? Yes. It was quite different to the Southern ones. I mean, the running was very obvious, and the running is not exactly my strongest point. I'm not a slow runner, but I haven't got the head for it. So the running in the Northern Time Trials was around a massive field. You went down the field, along the ditch, and back out that ditch and up the field. So you knew what was coming. So I think mentally, for me, that was the hardest part of it. It's really the running. The obstacles were okay, but I don't know, a lot of the other athletes know. I suffer from Raynaud's. I suppose right. You know what it is. Anybody else, look it up. Lots of athletes seem to have it.
Lots of good athletes, weirdly.
Yeah, so for me, it kind of finished. There was 4 obstacles, and then it was the bucket carry. And as soon as I held that bucket, it wasn't a very long carry, but my fingers just went. And then I obviously was crawling through the obstacles, going for safety first, because I couldn't feel my fingertips. So I was trying to get my whole hand into things or around things to get across the course, but I still managed. So yeah, I was very happy. Sure.
And how about you, Nigel? Are you more from the running side, or do you not really care for the running too much in OCR?
When I did climbing, I used to be a plodder. I used to go out and plod 10 miles 2 or 3 times a week, and I was really slow. It was sort of 1 hour, 10 minutes a mile, and that's all I ever did was plod and climb. And I started doing OCR probably 8 or 9 years ago. I did a Spartan, and I thought, blimey, I've got to run. So we keep shortening our training distance. First, it was 5Ks with the park runs. For the time trials, we were running 1K, you know, sprint. And it's very, very different to the just plodding along and enjoying the countryside. Oh, there's a sparrow in the field. Yeah. But I think for the normal Northern time trials, it really brought it home how different it is to running a 1K. It was, it's absolutely exhausting. It's just slogging obstacle. And it's a very different type of training. But I think I got lucky in the Northern Time Trials. I was running down the field and a cow came by and I jumped on top of it. And I was lucky enough to be able to steer it for the rest of the course. So didn't do any of the running.
Daisy helped you out.
Yeah, luckily nobody saw. So I kind of got away with it.
I hate to tell you, mate, but we've got about 100,000 listeners. So I was going to say, you just let the cat out of the bag.
You've disqualified. They'll
be the video footage.
yeah, no video footage. Okay, so Nigel rode a cow to win the Northern Time Trial final.
Yeah, I couldn't find one in the Southern.
No, there wasn't any cows, was there? Not sure you would have got away with it in that field, to be fair, Nigel.
Probably not.
Yeah. Even if you could find a cow. And then, yeah, so one thing I noticed, I mean, the first time I met you actually this weekend, but one thing I noticed at the Southern is, and this is obviously, you know, because you obviously train at where you train, is you were so good through actual obstacles. Like, and this is my question to you guys, which is an interesting question to have. I always have this question because what people don't realize is OCR, not Ninja, but OCR is actually a discipline of running. So when it gets to the Olympics, if it ever gets to the Olympics, it will be on the track and field. It will be within the running segment. It won't be its own sport. It is a under the Federation of Sport, a sportif, which is the what Ian Adamson runs, it actually is determined as a running discipline.
Yeah, so, I think it is in a way, but it's a very separate thing. And although a lot of the coaches and the people involved have come from a running background, the Obstacle Sports Federation is now subdivided into OCR, Adventure Running, and Ninja. So really, that's why we're interested, because we want to drive the ninja sport. The OCR, to me, is just it's a pastime. It's something to do. It's fun. It's nice to get out there in the sunshine and run around. But we're really looking at the ninja side and training the ninja side. And for us, the obstacles are easy. It's the running bit between that's hard work.
I suppose then what you're looking for, Alex, what you're looking for is that 100-meter swipe distance.
Yep, that's the one.
Cool. Alex is shaking her head, though.
Big technical dash. But even then, it's still not technical enough. We want it to be desperately hard so most people fall off.
So what you'd find, so give me an example of what that would look like or be.
Well, we have a typical ninja obstacle is a tiny little 10 millimeter edge on a piece of wood, and you have to gripping along, and it's really, really hard in the rain. I could probably get along it in the rain for a couple of meters, but the number of people who could do that is very limited. So the ninjas are going, great, it's something really hard, whereas most people are going, well, I'm going to fall off this.
And
once it gets into that realm, then I'd do pretty well. Less running, more obstacles, more difficult obstacles. But then, of course, all the other ninjas come in and I'm up against them. So it's a bit of a balance.
And then does it become obstacle course racing? You know, at what point does it become ninja warrior racing?
This is the question. Yeah, there would be no running in a ninja competition.
No. And I suppose what would have to happen is what will happen in going forward is these standards will be met for each race. So if you have, 1,000K of running, then it is classed as an obstacle course. If you have less than 300 meters of running, it's classed as a ninja. But you can't have those silly obstacles, or you can have those silly obstacles. Talking about a 10 mil wedge, my coach says to me a couple of months ago, he says to me, Jack, he sends me these this plans, and it's like basically a removable edge. So like basically a hangboard.
Yeah.
With a bit of wood and a bit of wood and a couple of bolts that I can actually move the edge on. And he says, great, right, now set it at 10 mil and go do 10 second hangs on 10 mil. I was like, yeah, set it to 10 mil. Oh my God. Forearms, fingers, screaming. I can now do pull-ups on a 10 mil edge, great. I must admit. Yeah. But that's tough. It's good training. and actually, really funny enough, I just said to my wife yesterday, I said, Em, I said, when we move into the new house, because we've got like quite a big open roof truss space, I was like, you do realize I'm planning on putting a bouldering wall in the loft, don't you? And she went, that's fine. As long as when we move up there, it's down. I was like, yes, I've got the pass. So I'm now planning a bouldering wall in my loft. So like throughout the winter, sod going down the boulder, just go upstairs. Boom, sorted.
Everyone should have one.
Yeah, definitely. Have you got one other than Ape Index? Are you fine now that your obstacles are moving home?
No, we pretty much live here.
Yeah.
You don't get to go home when you run a gym. It's constant. I mean, I've got such a strong hoovering arm. I need to start hoovering with my left arm to even it out.
That's the benefit of being outside. We don't hoover.
Yeah.
We do have to cut the lawn, which is a pain in the rectum.
Yeah.
Absolute pain. So let's bring it back to the Southern Time Trial Finals, because that's what everyone would have mostly seen then this weekend. So I can't remember our times. They didn't really post our times today, but all we know is we did quite well. Let's put it that way. And Alex, we'll come to you first.
We did okay. I would like to remind everybody that watches or listens to audio podcast that a certain Jack Carpenter said somebody's going to run this course in 6:30. We are still waiting.
But do you know what, Alex? Sometimes it's called mind games. And sometimes it's called really tell the crowd something that isn't never going to happen, but yet they believe it. And
I myself said I was aiming for sub 12. I was hoping for close to 10 minutes if I was honest. However, on the day, I wasn't feeling my brightest. And most of my time was lost either standing around in front of the obstacle, kind of, because nothing on this course is worth that penalty loop. If people haven't watched it, there was a penalty loop, which was, I'm guessing, was it about 100 meters or so?
Yeah, about that. Not quite. 18.
But you were carrying a 16 kilo kettlebell. Now, if you're running some
of the footage, I was going to say the average time for most of the women and men was between 30 and 45 seconds.
I watched a particular female athlete on this penalty loop because she was running around really fast. Otherwise, it took her 42 seconds to get around that loop. So not to be underestimated. So I think in both of the time trials, a clean run won the race. And in both time trials, I believe there were only two girls with a clean run, which weren't the same ones. But I mean, those people with the clean run both times were on the podium.
Yeah, 100%. But aren't we getting to that in OCR now? So for I always say to, I mean, I do a lot of Spartan racing, and I always say to Luke, I say, look, now, like, for instance, like Nigel could probably contest this. 5 years ago, and no offense to anybody that was winning 5 years ago, but you could fail four obstacles and still win. Now the field is so tight, you cannot fail, and this goes for anything. You can't make a mistake, and especially at the weekend. You know, a second mistake could make you fifth or first. You know, probably not in your case or our cases because we did quite well. But in general, you know, if you made a mistake, you were last or off the podium in this case. But that's OCR, and that's actually why I really like running OCR, because I mean, I had three athletes at that course at the weekend, and two of them hadn't done OCR before, first race ever. And when he made a mistake, he could see his head go down and his body language changed and he slowed right down. That is something with a bit of experience. You realize you've just got to keep pushing. You've just got to keep taking those risks, because you never know, your competitor might make a mistake and fail. Now, it's a little bit different in time trialing, because obviously you know what's happened. But, you know, within a certain race without COVID, you've just got to keep pushing and pushing and pushing to the very end.
It's an interesting point you make about the Spartan, because the penalties there are typically 30 burpees or something. And it's not just doing the burpees and the time, it's the fact that your energy is zapped when you finish. So training on the obstacles, if you can save energy on the obstacles, then you've got more energy for running, you've got more energy to do the rest of the course. And I think it's kind of the difference. Ninja stuff, you're just slogging through and trying your best. And on the OCR stuff, you're trying to maintain your energy. So getting through the obstacles efficiently becomes very important.
Yeah, briefly coming back to that, I wasn't really in agreement with Nigel on the distances. I would like to be good at everything.
Yep.
I'd like to do all three distances, the 100 meters, the 3K and the 12 or 15K, whatever it is. But like Nigel said, it's a very, very different game. It's good. I can run, yes. And yes, I can do the obstacles, but the combination of the two and finding out, I have very little experience OCR racing. It's finding that level of how fast can I run and still reliably do the obstacle after without making a mistake. Mm-hmm. I mean, as for the Southern time trials, I made a slight mistake on one of the very first obstacles. And yes, like you said, it kind of crushed me a bit. I'm going, oh my God, I've wasted X amount of seconds here. But it is really the mind game of going, okay, just keep running. Whatever happens, happens. Like you said, the other athletes aren't perfect either.
Yeah, exactly. And that is probably what I am learning every year, is that actually OCR, yes, you've got your grip. Yes, you've got your obstacles. Yes, you've got your running, but you've also got the mindset. And, you know, and it's a massive part of racing, in all racing, whether you're racing cars or snails. You know, mindset is a massive thing. I don't know why snails, but you know what I mean. It's a massive thing. And it's funny you should say about that first ramp, because is it the ramp you're on about, Alex?
No, I unfortunately made a mistake. Quite a few, looking back, I'm feeling slightly better, because quite a few athletes made that mistake. There was an over under with a rec bag.
Yeah.
And you're meant to throw the rec bag over and go over yourself. And quite a few of us threw the rec bag over, went through underneath, and then went, oh no, and run back. My mistake was, instead of just going back and jumping over myself, I decided to drag the rec bag all the way back with me. No comment on that. I'm really sorry for myself.
So actually, you won by a lot further. And what's really interesting, right, is that's the first time I've had an opportunity to film while everyone else is watching, for instance, because I was obviously doing the live. And what was really interesting is how many athletes, and you were probably one of the better ones, Alex, how many of the athletes had came out without having a really clue of what the hell they were doing? Like, they haven't even researched, looked, asked. I mean, you got half hour on site. I mean, Nigel, you come on for your run. Yeah, you had half hour to run round. You as I'd imagine, as a bouldering guy, as a climbing guy, you're looking at your routes, you're picking out, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do this. You know, you had a clean run, right, Nigel?
Yeah, we watched all the videos. We watched the kids running around. We watched, well, I watched the girls running around. Yeah. Walked around all the obstacles thinking, here's what I'm going to do on this one. I'm going to miss this bit out. I'm going to jump over that. And it does make a lot of difference if you can pre-visualize it. And in the northern time trials particularly, it was an easy course to visualize. When we were at PT Barn, it was quite difficult. There were lots of switchbacks. But if you can get it all in your head up front, it makes its life so much easier. And this is the thing with straight races. If it's a big straight line, you're just hammering down this thing. If you've got to turn left, then right, then left, under this, over that, it gets really confusing. And visualizing that course can make so much difference. I mean, it can probably shave half a minute to a minute off your time.
Yeah, on the note of visualization, I saw a clear pattern. Here's some good advice for all the OCR people. I'm sure they're thinking along the same line, but I noticed quite a few ninjas were down at the Southern Time Trials as well. There were a few at the Northern Time Trials as well. And the first thing we do, we go up to the obstacle, and you see any of the ninjas either drop to the floor or stretch out their arms and see how many of those can I skip. Because it comes down to energy again. People think, oh, we got endless grip strength. Yeah, maybe we do. But really, I think if the ninjas are doing well, it's because they have looked at that obstacle and they know how far their reach is and they know exactly how far they can swing and what they can do. And that's how you save energy for the whole course run, really. We could mention Jack's magic move of jumping for the bell. Yeah. Now.
Good thinking. To heaven move.
But to be fair, I mean, well, that's interesting because, I mean, Scotty PT said to me, okay, Jack, you've just beaten everyone by half a minute. Do you think running around with a camera helped you or hindered you? And I said, but it works both ways. You know, like, for instance, I covered nearly 15 miles. Yeah. So I covered 8 miles on the Saturday while in the kids and then up to 15 miles that day following the men. So I'd done nearly a marathon just running around with the camera. And actually what was hurting me the most was my gimbal arm by holding the camera right in front of me. And actually a couple of times, if you heard me, I was like, I'm really worried about my hat. It's like not working. But anyway, that race adrenaline kicks in, you carry on. But one thing I did do is being a coach as well, and a bit like what you said there, I watched every athlete, especially ones I know, I watched them make mistakes. I watched them make good things. I watched them. And I just took all that in as an athlete, as a coach, and went, well, if he can do it, I know I can do it better. Yes, I might have been a bit too confident with saying to Scotty, I'm going to jump that. Because I said, in the rules, and am I allowed to jump that? And he looked at me and he just smiled and went, I'm not saying anything, meaning, yes, you can. Yeah. And then when I saw Jesse sort of get to the top, and I said to him at the end, you got to the top and stopped. Was it because you were hurting? He's like, yeah, I didn't trust my grip, so I had to go for the bell. So I'm like, well, if he's not trusting his grip at the bell, why go up and down? I might as well just jump straight across. I know I can do that. You know, I know it's possible. It's just, have I got the balls at that current time? And actually, what's really weird is when I came around, I heard Scotty say, everyone be quiet, he's going to do the jump. And I'm like, oh, shit, now I've got to do it. But actually, it just naturally happened. In my head, I'd already visualized me doing it a few times, and it just naturally happened, and I didn't even think anything of it. Yeah. I mean, I've watched my lap back on the guy that took my camera, albeit a poor camera skills, but I've watched my lap back, and I think I'm just very lucky that I've got a training facility, and I'm able to train on obstacles like that all day, because same with you guys, it just felt like flow. Not once did I worry about messing anything up or missing. And to be fair, I ran with a massive smile on my face. You know, I didn't even think about winning. Wasn't one of my things. I didn't even know there was prize money. You know, it wasn't until James texted me afterwards and went, Jack, what's your bank details? Like, what for? What do you want? I'm not sending anything. So I think a part of it, there was no pressure and I didn't have time to panic. For instance, like, I'm on the camera, I'm filming, I'm doing all that live. I didn't even have time to think about, oh my God, what if I make a mistake? What if I do this? I just did it. Again, I made a couple of silly little mistakes, but seconds, you know, like, I didn't quite get up the vert ramp first time. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to double hand and miss out some bits on that horrible low rig.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd had a bit too much propulsion. I actually did a 360 spin before I carried on. So just little things like that, I mean, we're actually going back this weekend. I'm going to go back and beat the woman's time with a weighted vest on.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, easy. Easy.
I'm going to try.
Okay, I'm going to come back and run a better time because on the note of the women's times, I mean, I noticed a clear pattern, both in the northern and even worse in the southern ones. I think we all go out with the best intentions, but girls go for safety first. Mm. And our run times are just poorer because we like to stop and think and stop and think, while the boys are quite often, they're high risk and they just go all out. For
yeah,
some, it works out. For others, it doesn't. And as the note of watching things, we always feel you gain a lot by watching a lot of other people. I can say that in a lot of the ninja competitions, climbing competitions, and on Ninja Warrior Germany, you are never allowed to watch any athletes before you have run.
Mm-hmm.
Because
and that's got to be tough.
You watch and learn because you do watch and learn to a certain extent. I mean, I'm a very much an analytical kind of person. I stand there and I look exactly what everybody's doing. Yeah. Like you mentioned the low rig, I did a similar thing to you every time I swung because I was so scrunched up. I was swinging around too far. I didn't do a 360, but I was doing a lot of swiveling and wasting time on it. If I'd seen somebody else do it before, I'd go, okay, not going that, going sideways.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
but I suppose that's where as well, like at the time I did a whole 360 because I had too much, but I also had trust in my left hand to be able to hold myself while doing it. So it didn't faze me. It's not like I panicked, you know, I just carried on, styled it out. But like things like rec bag, that doesn't bother me. I carry rec bags all day long. That is my bread and butter, you know, like, you know, so many people made the rec bag look bloody awkward. It's like, Jesus, just put it on your back and run with it. Stop shuffling it around and moving it. And
Yeah. Credit to James and Scotty. There were things to favor any height of athlete because we don't like obstacles that are a complete height filter. Mm. That's what we call it if it's really awkward. I think it was good to put this half low rig in because I'm reasonably tall for a girl. Taller ones would struggle on that. But then on the rec bag, you could just stand by the over. And at my height, you could just drop the bag over without having to actually physically lift it very high.
Yeah, 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 sure.
So,
and some of the shorter athletes admittedly struggled with that. But yet with the lower rig, they flew through it quicker than what the taller girls did. I mean, I said, I think it was even you on the live feed, Alex. I was panicking about that mid rig because it wasn't a low rig, which where you really have to screw it up. But it wasn't a high rig where you could extend either. It was like a mid rig. It was a bit of an awkward, you know, didn't favor a 6 foot guy anyway, let's put it that way. But but again, I think again you panic about it and you don't need to because we all got through it anyway. The only thing I would say that particular course was missing, and I said this to Scotty afterwards and he agreed, was a crawl of some kind. They never made us go completely on the floor for an extended period, because I think when you have to crawl and then come up and run, that's quite a hard transition to do. So the only place he could have done it, you know, where you had to run through to the trampette onto the net, you know, you went under the A-frame cargo net, he could have done like some sort of crawl there maybe, so just to get I don't know, I'm just being mean now, I think, but
I think that both courses were excellent, northern and southern. The northern one was a bit more OCR heavy. Yes, only for the reason, like you said, there was a long barbed wire crawl and there was this thing where you had to go along. I carefully called it a ditch. It's called a burn. Basically, a little stream where you were going over, under, and you're running along in the stream. And a lot of us did not run in the stream because it's rocky and it was kind of unpredictable. So that was a bit more the OCR side, that you were out in that field, you're doing the crawl, you're doing the running in the ditch, and then you're coming out the water and you carry on running. And it's like you said, it's kind of not nice on your legs, especially if it gets cold.
So like that.
The southern one was a bit more obstacle kind of heavy, but there was a lot of things that it's things that we don't usually train. We don't usually do the drags and the weighted carries and that kind of thing. We did do that for 2 weeks before the Southern time trials, but it's a bit late for your body to adapt.
Well, you say that. I mean, I won't put any massive carries in my training to at least 4 weeks up into the event, because people train that all the time. But what people don't realize, you throw a 22.5 kilo rec bag on your back, that's quite fatiguing. You know, your legs know about that. Your lower back knows about that. So it's choosing when to do it and when not to do it, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
So talking, well, two things. Something you'd mentioned there, Alex, about an athlete wanting to do it all. really, in my mind, I can only think of a couple of athletes that can do that. John Alban being one, Ryan Atkins being one, and potentially Lindsay Webster being the other, who can actually do potentially a 100 meter, a 3K, a 15K, and an ultra. You know, I remember talking to John every year, and he says, you know, it's getting further away from that. Soon we will have your Nigel smashing up your, you know, your pure climbing ninja. You know, we'll have the Alexes smashing your 3K. They won't be able to touch that. Soon, I think it will go to the point where you will be so specialized in each individual event. You know, you will have a champion for each thing. And I, as much as I think John currently could still outweigh anybody on a course over 3K easy because of the running aspect of it, I think if he won't ever enter, I don't think, a 100 meter ninja dash, because he knows there's guys out there that would, you know, don't even need the legs, you know, they just go over all arms. So I think that aspect of someone being good at everything, I think you can be good at everything. I think by next year, I think we'll have an individual winner in every individual discipline, I think.
I think it has to go that way, because if the same person's winning every race, the races aren't differentiated enough. You don't have a 100-meter sprinter winning the 5K and the 10K and the marathon, do you? I mean,
no.
These become very specialized training things. And in climbing, it's the same kind of thing. We have three disciplines. We have climbing with a rope, which you typically go up 15 meters on a rope. We have boulder problems, which are 4 meters. And then we have the speed climbing, which is a really different kind of thing. And I've been doing a bit of speed climbing, and I'm kind of enjoying it. It's the same route everywhere, exactly as the OCR thing is. And this is kind of the way the WRSF have set up Ninja and the 100-meter course now. It's going to be the same route everywhere in the world to do over and over and over again and shave hundredths of seconds off.
Mm.
And in the beginning, I was kind of against it because I like the variety, and the Ninja courses are always very different, and the OCR courses too. And I think it would be a shame to end up with that kind of thing, because a lot of the climbers aren't really interested in speed, and it needs to be a separate discipline. But when it goes to the Olympics, they're all going to be mapped into one, so everybody has to compete in all the same thing. And if OCR does that, then it kind of takes away from the specialists who are really good at one at 100 meters or 3K or 15K.
So do you not think we could have both? I mean, I've had this conversation with Ian Anderson. I still generally do think we could have, because I know Spartan wants to be standardized. So they really do want to go down that route of the same course, the same obstacles, the same distance, the same every time, so you can smash it. A bit like how Hyrox and Decafit are now, like the functional fitness games, where no matter where you go, and I mean, that's starting in Germany, no matter where you go, you know you've got the same 10K route or whatever it is, you know. But nuclear, you turn up to nuclear on Saturday, guess what? You have no clue what's coming up. So you still got that for your general fun OCR muddy type players, if you like. But you know, you've still got this, you know exactly, and you will get guys that will just train that for specifically, like you say, they'll dedicate a full, I mean, like we've got Russia coming up now in September. You know, I was selected, I think you were selected, were you, Alex?
Yes, I was, yeah, for the 100 meters and the 3K.
So it's like, okay, so do we now dedicate from now a whole year just training for that 100 and 3K?
I prefer a changing course, because, I mean, the time trials showed that very well. We went out in one weekend, we did 5 time trials, you know, not the finals now, the 2 qualifiers. We did 5 time trials in a weekend. We set good times on all of them. I set the top female time on most of them, but then people kept on going back there that lived locally, and they're beating their time, they're beating my time, they're beating everybody else's time. I enjoyed that then the finals are a brand new course, nobody knows what's coming, and it's the same game for everybody. Because when it is a set course, no matter what that where that is, if you have the opportunity to train on a set course, yeah, we all improve. You and me go back to the Southern Time Trials on Saturday or Sunday, we'll beat our time by a minute. You know, so I prefer if it's a brand new course and everybody gets set out there, because I think that shows the standard of the athlete better, how they can adapt. And I think that whole adapting to the course is part of OCR.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. Yes, one short course, like 100 meter as a set course, the same as in speed climbing. That's the same everywhere all the time. That might be fun because that's fun to watch for people.
Yep.
However, I think if it's always the same and all the courses are standardized, I think it takes away from the sport personally.
And you said it there, you said because it's fun to watch, and that's exactly why they will do
because they can
put it on a track and they can put videos around it and it will be quick and fast and, you know, fails and, oh, it'll be epic. But I'm the same as you. Like, I got into Spartan racing because I liked the idea. I had no idea what was coming around the corner. Then they start introducing course maps, which really screwed me up because, like, I liked getting around the corner and going, I have no idea, barbed wire, 30-foot wall, twister, whatever it is. Then they started saying, oh, it's going to be exactly 10K. It's going to be exactly 5K. All of a sudden, you're getting these people trained specific, and it's like, come on, where's the excitement? For the first time in the last 2 years, I know we haven't raced much this year, once, you know, bearing in mind that was my first race this week. do you know what I mean? Like, I actually felt excited because I knew everyone that was going was all in the same place.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, you could say I had a slight advantage for being there all day, but I still hadn't touched any of the obstacles. I physically hadn't felt any of the obstacles. You know, I had as much looking as what anybody else could have looked at, really. But yeah, for the first time in a long time, I actually felt excited, and it suited me a little bit because actually it brings level playing field for these ninja. I mean, like, don't get me wrong, some of those ninja guys that are there this weekend, rightfully, if you put them in your place and you put on a 100-meter course, they would probably kill us all, easy.
They'd thrash us. To mention a few names, Retro Dino, Dean Cheatham, and Chris Stefano, that we lovingly called Chris the Beast, the Stefano. They absolutely thrash us on more or less all ninja competitions. This is the first time they gave it a go. I liked watching the ninja athletes, both in the northern and southern time trials, because we all pretty much, we were dying because of the distance. The obstacles, everybody's flying through it. None of the ninjas had any penalties, neither in the north nor in the south. It's just that how far and how long can you run and how long can you keep this up without getting completely out of breath?
Well, that is their failing obstacle, isn't it, really? Their failure is the fact that they can't hold a 5.5-minute pace.
Cardio,
out of interest, I don't suppose you spoke to Dean or Chris since then, but
yes, we have.
Are they now like, shit, I want more of this, I'm going to do more training, or are they like, screw that, I'm going back to Ninja Warrior?
I think they both want more of this. I think the ninja community in the UK is extremely small. We haven't had many competitions, well, none in 2020. Oh, we had one, actually. But other than that, it was being quite quiet. I think it's a new thing to branch out into, especially if either of those are becoming Olympic sports. So yes, I think Chris and Dino, they both want to go back and do more cardio. I know that Chris had actually started training about 4 weeks before, so he did start doing quite a bit of cardio to kind of improve himself. And out of all the ninjas there, Chris ran the best time.
yeah. And that's the thing, is it? But, and then I suppose the horrible thing is when you realize, like, for instance, me as an OCR racer, you know, I'm averaging 50 to 55, 60 miles a week, you know, and I have been doing for, you know, the last 3 or 4 years. Do you know what I mean? Even before then, I was doing 20, 30. Endurance, it's a long, it doesn't just happen like that overnight. You can't just do 4 weeks of training. It's a bit like you and your climbing, Nigel. You know, like, if you do it 3 times a day for the last 10 years, guess what, you ain't going to keep up with that. You know, that's experience and endurance, and unfortunately OCR, when you go over that minute and a half threshold, it's an endurance sport. You know, so that's where we're at. So before we finish, tell me a little bit more about your particular training facility. How do you train? What do you train? Is it group sessions? Is it, you know, tell me more. Sell it to me.
Who's going to sell it? I'm going to sell it. Well, first of all, at the moment, all we're doing is open play, meaning we're open 5 days a week. You can come in anytime at all. You just go on the website, you book a slot. At the moment, it's £8 for a 2-hour slot. You just come in and you can train on whatever you want. We have loads of different runs. We've got more obstacles than most. Anything you've ever seen at any world championships or Spartan race or anything like that, we've got it here, but it's just that tiny bit harder. You know, like, they had the wheel nuts and the Euros that people didn't like. We've got one here. It's a lot smaller and the edge is a lot smaller. And that applies to more or less everything, anything you've seen. We've got this obstacle, because I'll hand you over to Nigel. He's the master of building everything. When we see anything in any of the OCR or ninja races or Ninja Warrior, we go, we got to build one. So here we go, Nigel, sell the place. You're the man of all the gadgets.
Nigel, do you have a tradesman's background?
No, I'm mostly a physicist and programmer and electronics person.
You're getting better.
I tell you, building this climbing wall, I did more 3D maths than I've done since I left school. It was an absolute nightmare. Lots of programming, lots of calculations, and it just went on forever. But the ninja stuff is a lot easier to build than the climbing wall. It's pretty much everything square. I'd like to say something a bit different about Ape Index. It's a movement-based gym. And lots of people don't get that. The kids get it. They come in, they run around, they grab something, they swing on something, they'll jump off something, they'll find something they enjoy, and they'll do it over and over and over and over again until the parents are blue in the face and they're still going, oh, one more go, one more go.
I want to go home.
Yeah, and the parents are desperate to leave. So the core skills here are climbing, obstacles, and ninja, and that's pretty much it. But we obviously have lots of different stuff that people can train on. We've got some weights. We've got lots of boxes people can do parkour on. And it's really that kind of approach is, you know, mix everything together and let anybody do what they like. And a lot of people do have a problem being inventive enough or imaginative enough to create themselves some kind of a program where they can get better. The kids inherently understand that they're just playing. And that's all we're doing. We're playing. We're playing for 4 hours a day, swinging on stuff and jumping off stuff and improving our accuracy and strengths and skills and endurance. But we don't really do much in the way of cardio. It's all skills-based and strength-based. And when we get into OCR and there's a race coming up, it's like, oh, my God, we'll have to go running again. And now I'm saying, oh, thank God the OCR stuff's over. I'm a climber again. And all I've been doing is climbing up and down the wall.
I think if people, what we do, I mean, at the moment, due to the whole COVID-19 or is it COVID-2020 by now situation, is the only thing we really do. We don't do any classes right now, but we do personal training sessions. So if anybody wants to come and wants to train with Nigel or me, if they put it on their form who they want to be trained by, we can do them a personal training session. We do a weight loss and that sort of thing as well. But our main thing is really we teach obstacle technique. And a lot of it. We also should mention on a Wednesday night, 7 till 9, every Wednesday, we've got a race night and we've now got a monthly course. So this course stays up for the month. So for people that come every week, they can obviously improve their time on that race night. Yeah.
And I'm top just, of the leaderboard is currently James Burton.
James Burton came in and came thrashed me and Nigel.
Oh, that would be beatable. Then don't worry about that.
Jack is coming up to beat this time.
I'm generally just right now, I am Google mapping to see how far away you guys are from me because I'm Suffolk, so I'm not that far.
A couple of hours maybe.
A couple of hours is nothing. 100 miles.
Oh, okay.
2 hours.
And for the ones that do want to train cardio, the place we're in at the moment is right next to Ilston Meadows. So you can go out and do your 10K and come back in and do all the obstacles.
Yeah, 10K, marathon.
Do
you know what? And I love you, Nigel, for saying this. That exactly is the point that I think people aren't getting right now is like, when I get people to feel fit, right, they're always scared of coming because they're like, oh my God, you're going to kill me. It's hard work. Yeah. What they don't realize after about an hour when they're head to toe in mud and they've got this banging smile on their face, they're like, that was like being a kid. And I was like, that's exactly how I want you to feel. You know, I want you like climbing a bloody rope for God's sake. I mean, you must have it mind blown when people come to your place. When they come and climb a 6 meter, I ain't done this since I was 5, you know, why, you know, and this is something I've got a child on the way and the swing I'm not going to do right is put shoes in the damn thing and tell it to stop climbing because they're the first thing we do, sit down, shut up. Oh no, oh, hold on. We want it to walk. We want it to crawl. We want it to move. Now sit down and shut up. You know, it's like we're training all the wrong things for our youngsters. And as adults, we are becoming a very sedentary, sat down in front of a computer on a driving, you know, and we're losing the art of just playing movement. And, you know, I do a couple of movement classes and it's basics, very basics, but these guys cannot do it. You know, even bear crawls on the beach, you know, things like that, lizard movements, bear crawls, you know, going down, rolling, body.
The full Asian squat. You check it out. I mean, for anybody, this is my favorite thing, doing a full squat and put your hands behind your back and stay squatting.
But who can't do that? A lot of people.
Thing for the average person.
Yeah. And what people don't realize, that correlates to our, what we do as for competitive fun. So when it becomes to OCR, guess what? If you can get down in a squat or you can hold yourself here because you're strong enough in 90, guess what? That low rig at the weekend becomes so much easier. You know, having that feeling of time and movement in space, jumping across that level up or stairway to hit that bell, is because I knew I had the movement within myself to do that. And but that's where it comes from. It's just like you say, you're there 4 hours a day. I'm at my place 4 or 5 hours a day playing. And I don't even do obstacles. I say to myself, I haven't really trained a lot this week. But by the time you've demonstrated, you know, a few rope climbs, a few monkey bars, a few of this, a few of that, you come off going, why do my arms hurt? You know, like I've done 4 hours of bloody training without really doing 4 hours of training. Then I go and do an hour of training. You know, that's a lot of endurance time doing the thing that I don't really see it as a job. Do you, I mean, do you see Ape Index as a job?
No, it's just somewhere to hang out and have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I just want to say a few motivational words because people kind of watch OCR athletes or athletes in general and think, oh, they're so much better than me. I'm never going to be like them. And the problem is they never get started. They're frightened by looking at you and me and going, oh my God, well, these people have trained. These people cut the skills. No. I just want to remind everybody, everybody started somewhere. I was just the average mum of two kids. I went out, I watched these boys. I was horrified at what they could do, yes, but I was motivated by it. And the biggest problem, I think, for most people is they're always waiting until they're that tiny bit lighter and that tiny bit stronger and that tiny bit something. Yeah. It does never happen. Just go out, have fun. If you feel kind of self-conscious, do it in a corner where nobody can watch you, but just get started, just hang on the bar. If that's all you can do, get both hands on that bar and hang on the bar and just enjoy yourself. I think it's actually easier when you have kids because I think how I really started is I have no shame. When I used to take my kids to the playground, I started swinging on the monkey bars. And in the beginning, I was just like everybody else. I couldn't do anything. And now 4 or 5 years down the line, I can go into I can go around the Northern and Southern time trials and win it. So I just want to say to people, just get started, have fun. Just really don't worry. It's just about improving yourself. Don't worry what anybody else could do. You know, I mean, I can look at an Olympic athlete and I'm not like them.
Yeah, well, but they probably thought that 5 years ago, you know?
Exactly. It's the hardest bit is getting started.
Yeah, 100%. And once you get started, then if you've got the right personality and you've got the right commitment, I mean, a lot of it's commitment, isn't it? And if you can put that time and effort into what you love doing, then normally all those advantage things comes out, like losing weight. I mean, we don't focus on losing weight at Field Fit, but it's a bonus of what happens when you just do what you enjoy. Yeah, it's good stuff. Guys, where can people find Ape Index? On Instagram and Facebook? Is that the best place to find?
Yeah, we're on pretty much everything. So just type it in and you'll find us.
Yeah, Google. Ape Index. The website address is www.apeindex.rocks. Rock like a stone with an S at the end. Rocks.
Is it?
Okay. Yeah. And if you click on this thing, you can just go and book your slot. You'll see a few pictures. Just come in, have fun. I mean, we're here every day. So any questions you can ask any of us or any of our members, that's another big advantage of climbing, ninja or OCR is the community is really friendly, is really helpful. You'll always find somebody. If you can't do something, you'll ask somebody. Somebody will give you a hand here. Show you the way.
And personally, obviously, I suggest you do jump over to Alex's Instagram and check out some of her skills.
Yes, please add me on Instagram. It's Alex, A-L-I-X, 2727.
Yeah, I won't ask. That's just one of those generated numbers, isn't it? And then, Nigel, you're on Instagram as well?
Yeah, Ninja Nigel on everything.
Ninja Nigel.
It's ninja.nigel on Instagram.
and Ninja Nigel, do you always have a colourful top on when you race? Because that's all I got asked for on the live feed. Look for the guy with the colourful top.
Usually I have the dullest clothes on, but I wore that shirt for the Northern Time Trial, so I wore it again for the Southern because I thought it was my lucky shirt, but it didn't work the second time.
No, you didn't have your lucky pants on either, did you?
That's right. That must have been what it was. Lucky socks.
I can see now. I like going in like the black ninja. I like to make myself nearly invisible because I like to think I'm the underdog, so nobody can see me.
Nah, man. Nah, it needs to be colourful. It needs to be completely colourful.
I think Nigel's onto the right thing because usually I say winners wear red.
The best thing about the shirt was it was really easy to find myself in photographs afterwards.
That's true. That is very true.
Usually I'm searching and searching, going, oh, I had a black top on. So does everybody else.
Yeah,
that was, time.
It's definitely an OCR. I think it's because what people get told is wear dark clothes so you can't see the mud.
Yeah.
What?
I know.
We don't care about that.
Nah. So tie-dye shirt all the way. I like that, Nigel. Yeah. That maybe should be your new, the new Ape Index kit should be like a tie-dye top.
Yeah, maybe.
I like sneaking up on people. I like to be kind of invisible.
Invisible ninja.
Invisible.
No worries, guys.
It's the ninja way.
The ninja way. Thank you very much for your time and effort, guys. Well done on the Northern course and the Southern course. You got absolutely smashed it. Yeah. Thank you for joining me today. I think we've probably just opened a few people's minds, hopefully. And I'm definitely coming down to Ape Index. So I will keep on this call afterwards. I'm going to talk to you about coming down to Ape Index.
Okay,
thank you very much, guys.
Looking forward to seeing you. Thank you very much.
Bye.